Today's podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast. It's been real easy for us to monetize this podcast, right, Javier?
It's been so easy. We've been getting that Podgo money, getting our bags up, getting the content out, more importantly, but also kind of getting paid while doing so, which is, it's nice.
It is nice. It's nice to become the $1 million man. You might not be the $1 million man right away on Podgo, but you can at least secure your Podgo bag if you have your own podcast. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. And be sure to add our podcast in the How Did You Hear About It on Podgo so that we get a little shout out too. Tell them that your boys sent them.
Yeah, tell them that your boys sent them because it's your boys' crossbody at work.
Welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Evan.
I am Javier.
And the boys are rolling again today.
We're rolling.
Are high.
We keep it moving. We keep it moving.
And it's Rock Part 3. It's Rock when he turns Hollywood jackass. And it's the return of the Rock, aka Return of the Scorpion King. Very exciting when Rock returns.
It's honestly arguably the most charismatic version of the Rock.
Yeah,
if you really think about it.
It's weird. He's become just more charismatic over time, which is hilarious when you think about how good Rock was as a wrestler. And
yeah.
Then now, as he ages, he gets more and more likable and charismatic. It's kind of like, where's the peak? Where's it going to go?
Yeah, I don't know. At one point, are we just going to get old man Rock where he's like consistently just like the best old person?
Yes.
Like, are we going to be at the point where the Rock is like putting out videos where... I mean, nowadays we have Twitter, but in like 40 years, we're going to have some sort of shit that's like a hologram or something. Am I going to wake up and see hologram Rock videos
where he's
an old man doing crazy things?
He's still doing like insane bench presses and squats.
Yeah, by that point, he'll be former president,
Dwayne Johnson. He's just lifting up old people in the old age home. He's just curling.
Yeah,
grandmas.
No, he'll be lifting up our goddamn country. That's for what he's going to be doing.
Yeah, it really does seem like his new show, Young Rock, is a test run of kind of his political aspirations, which I think is kind of weird.
It also actually has a pretty high score on Rotten Tomatoes and on audience demands. I haven't seen it yet. I might actually after this season's over because I cannot watch things live anymore. I am a millennial.
Have you been watching WandaVision live? Are you a Marvel guy?
I've been watching WandaVision. It drops here Thursday at 3 in the morning, and let's just say by 6 in the morning, that thing has already been watched.
Man, the life you live, the life you live. All right, let's do all the housekeeping stuff first. First of all, follow us on Twitter at CrossBodyOfWork. And last week, we gave a little birthday suggestion to the people, and we said if you tweeted us, Fuck Earl Hebner, a.k.a. Javier's life motto, that we would give you a shout-out on the pod, and we got one. We did.
We got one.
Chad McVean, thank you for tweeting
King.
At us. King status for Chad. King Chad, you've taken the title from Baron Corbin. Congratulations. We appreciate it. We appreciate all of the hatred for Earl Hebner. I know Javier does.
I absolutely do. I appreciate you so much, Chad. You have no idea. You made my entire week. Honestly, I might get the tattoo of that tweet on my body sometime.
Ooh, I like that.
I said might. There is a 0% chance of it actually happening, but I like to throw the possibility out there.
Do not pull a hammy backpedaling. The other one that we wanted to give a shout out to is Dej Kirkby. I don't know how to pronounce that properly. I'm probably butchering it.
Dej Kirkby. Shout out.
You gave us the happy anniversary tweet. We appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, I only had a slight tear running down my eye, but it was still a tear running
with
down my eye.
With a tear in my eye.
Yes. Rick Shout Rick. Out to everyone that showed love, whether you told us it or not. I know a lot of people like to give tough love. They don't really like to talk to us as much, and that's fine. Because there are podcasts who have asked for the same exact thing that we did, and I did absolutely nothing about it. So...
It's true. We will
shout
keep,
out to everyone.
We will keep the offer open. If you want to tweet at us, Fuck Earl Hebner, or something nice, we will shout you out on the podcast. We will.
Yeah, we'll keep that going consistently. It doesn't matter if it's now, if it's 3 weeks from now, 3 months from now, 3 years from now. If you give me a fuck Earl Hebner, I will shout you out on this podcast.
I love it. Also, as we are on the road to WrestleMania and also the road to AEW Revolution, don't want to, you know, upset any of the fanboys out there. You know, we can appreciate all. Check out fullpresswrestling.com for all of your wrestling coverage, all your recaps, and some fun articles. Fullpresswrestling.com or FPC_wrestling on Twitter. I think that's all of the housekeeping stuff.
Merch table's open.
Fullpressshop.com, merch table's open. Let's move to match numero uno, and that is The Rock versus somebody who's still friggin' going. Still going. That's Chris Jericho, baby. No Mercy 2001, a WCW championship match in WWE. What a weird concept.
Yeah, it was weird that they called it the WCW title for so long.
Well, I think the original goal, because they've talked about this before, was that they were going to have WCW as its own individual brand. Is they were going to continue to run WCW as its own brand instead of having Raw and SmackDown as two separate brands. They were going to do like Raw on one night and Nitro on another night, essentially.
Yeah, but this is after that decision was already canceled, because this is like months after the Bagwell.
The Bagwell Booker T match?
Booker T? Yeah.
But I think they just decided to keep the WCW title until they realized they knew for sure how they were going to unify them. And they wouldn't go on to unify them in, I think, a couple months or like 2 months from here. Like,
yeah, Vengeance 20. Vengeance 2002.
Oh, it was 2002?
Was it? I don't know. Was it? I don't remember if it was before or after the Rumble. I don't know if it was the February pay-per-view or the December one.
I think it was before. I think it's Vengeance was. I will Google it. But, you know, it's Jericho versus The Rock. Very exciting stuff.
Yeah, not the first time we see it. Not the last time we see it, but they went out there and had a good time. Yeah, it might be the best time we saw it. These two guys had a really good match here. It was methodical. There was a lot of psychology to it. And best of all, I had Paul Heyman on commentary.
It did. I knew you were going to make a comment about that. Jericho did win it at Vengeance 01, so it was at the end of the year.
There it is. Yeah, right before spoiler alert, not the first time he'll win it.
And Rock was a major player in the invasion angle. He won the WCW Championship from Booker T at SummerSlam after just returning in July of 01 after he was filming legendary film The Scorpion King.
It is legendary. I actually am a big fan of that movie.
I like the Mummy series a lot.
Yeah. It's actually really good. I'm here for the Mummy. I'm here for all the spinoffs of the Mummy. I'm not here for the Tom reboot? Cruise one nope. that came out a couple years ago.
No Mummy reboot.
We are here for Scorpion King.
And this is Jericho's first ever shot at the WCW Championship, and WWF chirps WCW after the fact, being like, how'd they never give this guy a shot? Like, commentary bigs it up for a while, being like, how did a guy like Jericho never get a shot in WCW? And it's like, yeah, that's the whole reason he was pissed off.
Yeah, it's like, hey, guys, remember the fact that this is Jericho's first title? Like, you guys didn't even give him a chance, really.
This is, like, I will say, the invasion angle was really weirdly handled. It was a very strange done things. They didn't have
didn't
a lot
work.
Of name. Didn't work. It's probably the biggest money left on the table moment in WWE, I would say, aside from maybe the hypothetical and now recently teased once again Punk Austin match. But in terms of like a long-term money-making machine, Invasion could have been so much different.
Well, yeah, if we're talking about money-making decisions, I would say that the most money left on the table is that we never got a match at WrestleMania between Sting and Undertaker.
Yes, that is also true.
I mean, Punk, don't get me wrong, Punk and Austin would have been awesome, but...
And now Sting takes powerbombs from Brian Cage.
Yeah, we do that now. That was scary when I saw it on Twitter.
I actually winced when I saw it. I was like, oh, no, no. Don't hurt him. Hurt his son, who will take all bumps.
Speaking of old people in All Elite Wrestling, Chris Jericho starts off this match with The Rock, and there is an intense headlock sequence.
It's a lot of headlocks early. It's a lot.
And not just headlocks. It's like headlocks with a lot of theatrics.
Aggressive headlocking. Yeah. It's a lot.
These dudes went in there.
And they trade some arm drags early. I think the first big move that I noted was a springboard dropkick by Jericho, knocking Rock to the outside. It's a very even match for the first, like, 7 or 8 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of that. You know, Jericho would go for a Walls of Jericho, I think, once or twice, and Rock would just immediately get out of the hold or grab for the ropes. You know, there was one point here early where Jericho hits a flying back elbow, and it got me thinking, are we going to see that with the Judas effect? Because, like, that would just be his finisher. It's just a back elbow.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, man. Jericho is...
Chris Jericho wins the AEW tag team titles with a flying Judas effect. Let's go, baby.
Oh, I don't want that. I don't want that at all. They brawl to the outside, and it seemed like early on, like once Jericho got in control, Rock would kind of power up a little bit. Jericho would cut him down quick.
Yeah.
There was one point where Rock managed to crotch Jericho when he was on the top rope and hit him with a superplex. That was really good. And then yeah. Rock gets in control, and that's when they kind of brawl to the outside.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just like you said, there were a couple times where Rock would fire up. At one point, he ate a stun gun. They fight around the announce table area, and it was funny because Heyman gets up, and he immediately reaches for this audio box.
Yeah.
And you could see the cables on it, and it's just like, only Paul Heyman would think to do this. The man truly is a money-making machine.
Maybe not the most financial, greatest financial mind in all of wrestling, but he knows about money. He knows.
No. This is about the time where I noticed that this match was really fucking physical. Because they started turning the gear up a little bit, and they started throwing some stiff shots.
I was impressed, I think, with the level of physicality, because I don't think of Rock as having particularly physical matches. He's had some, like, really long drawn-out affairs, and he's also had some brutal matches in different ways. Like, obviously, the Mick Foley Royal Rumble match is brutal.
Yeah.
But this was intensely physical and really relied on Rock being a strong wrestler.
Yeah, and it really was weird, because it's like you said, The Rock isn't typically known as a physical wrestler, but neither is Chris Jericho. He's also more of a finesse guy, too.
Yeah, especially this era.
Mostly about his holds and, you know, being not kind of like the high flyer, but a guy who can, you know, work his way in the air, kind of like Sami Zayn is now, you know? Yeah. Or, yeah, Seth Rollins would be another good example of that. He's more of in that mold, where he's kind of like a hybrid kind of guy. You don't really see these two going out there and being rough and tumble, but here they are. And, you know, attributing to Jericho's ability to fly, the guy hits a pitch-perfect missile drop kick at one point.
It's that really is just, good.
It's just incredible. And then he follows
and
that
then
up,
he
I believe.
Follows it up with a Hurricane Rana.
Yeah, he follows it up with a Hurricane Rana. Eventually, like, it's like a cool little sequence that eventually leads to him hitting a rock bottom, which is like, what? And it also got me thinking, does just everyone hit the rock bottom at this point? Is this when we hit the point where every match...
Everybody is allowed to steal. Everybody is allowed to steal the rock bottom. You're not really allowed to steal the people's elbow. And we'll talk about that in some of our later matches. But everybody's allowed to do the rock bottom. It's a little side slam. Everybody's allowed to do it at least once.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's also another attribution to The Rock being so unselfish when it comes to stuff. Like, The Rock doesn't care. He'll put anyone over, you know, unless you're Shawn Michaels. He'll put anyone over. He's very giving in the things he'll sell. He doesn't really care. He just wants to tell a good story, have a good match, get people invested in. Hell, I don't know what the story really was leading up to this match as far as, like, the investment with the crowd and stuff.
Both faces and reluctant partners.
Yeah, no, I knew that part. I meant more as, like, how enthralled people were in seeing this match.
True.
Because it's not the main event. The main event is, what is it, Kurt Angle, RVD, and
Austin.
Stone Cold?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that
well,
just
you
sounds
can't
like
have
a better
the
match on paper.
WCW Championship main event, a WWE event. That would be
yeah. And
insanity.
You apparently you can't have a kick it off either, even though it makes more sense to do so. But
no, that would be too.
Although I do
too
believe
easy.
The kickoff match was Edge versus Christian for the IC title, which we'll take it.
Yeah, we'll take it. So Jericho does at one point go for the people's elbow, like I mentioned, and Rock rolls out of the way. Then we get a really awkward dragon screw. We talked about Rock's dragon screw in the last episode. This one is just a pull by the leg.
Not look good.
He gets worse at dragon screws as the matches go on, because they think he hits one in our last match, and it's ugly, which is really strange. I don't know how he forgot to do one, but he just kind of forgot.
Yeah.
And that, of course, leads to a sharpshooter. And it's a very split crowd as Jericho hits the ropes. Like, a lot of people who were really excited for Jericho to potentially pull this off. I think probably, like, the WCW diehards who had seen Jericho for a long time and knew he was kind of struggling to get that belt versus, you know, people who freaking love The Rock.
Also, the same fact that both of these guys are baby faces. Yeah. So it's more of kind of a who do you like more kind of deal. And yeah, The Rock's going to generate, I would say, most of the reaction because he's fucking Dwayne Johnson. But Jericho had his supporters too.
Who do you like more historically?
I mean, Chris Jericho is my second favorite wrestler of all time. So it's different for me.
Yeah,
it's Eddie, Jericho, and Cena. Those are my top three guys. And, you know, I will never go against either one of them. So seeing Jericho here, it's kind of like a, yeah, Rock, we like you, but like, fuck off.
I would put Rock ahead of Jericho. I just love the showmanship of Rock. He was just something different. He was special.
It also didn't help that I just didn't get The Rock. You know, like, I started watching wrestling right at the tail end of his run. You know, he left, you know, shortly after Mania in 2003. I was watching, but I was still just like fucking 5-6 years old, and he was a heel, so yeah. I didn't really care as much about him. And by that point, I was watching SmackDown mostly. He was more of a Raw guy, and yeah, The Rock, I just missed it.
Yeah,
and then he was gone for 8 years, and by the time he came back, it's like, oh, now you're fighting my guy,
my dude. No.
No, buddy.
Rock goes to the outside with Jericho and hits a rock bottom through the announce table, which is a quality move to break an announce table. Unless the table breaks itself, it works perfectly.
And then we get my favorite spot of this match.
Go to.
There's a little slight pause as everyone gets situated. They get back in the ring. Rock sets up for a people's elbow. And right as he's about to drop, and right as he does the turn, he's about to, fully drop himself for the elbow. Jericho reaches, grabs him by the leg after the Rock's lifted his other leg. So he falls immediately down and puts on the Walls of Jericho.
Yeah, it
was perfect. There was no awkward step. There was no awkward drop. It was all fluid. It looked amazing. These two guys nailed that spot.
Stephanie then arrives, Stephanie McMahon. And throws a chair in the ring, and she gets kind of bumped off the apron, and then the walls get broken. She gets back on the apron, and Rock tosses her clean into the ring, because I guess she wasn't popular with either of these guys. Like, 70 was a
no.
Heel. Yeah.
No. So, yeah, Jericho runs towards her. I don't know if she jumped off. This commentary said she jumped off, so I think the spot was, like, done weirdly, and that she didn't time it right, because it looked like Jericho fucking decked her.
And then rock bottom to Stephanie. And then while the referee is distracted, there's a chair in the ring now. And Jericho hits a skull-crushing finale. That's what it is.
Yeah, he hits a skull-crushing finale on Steph. I believe it's just called, like, the pancake or something
like
that.
Well, no, he hits it on Rock.
No, oh, sorry. Did I say that wrong? Stephanie brought the chair in. He hit it on Rock. I believe it's called like a pancake or whatever, front face pancake. It doesn't matter. It's the show crush. It's the skull crushing finale.
You've seen it.
What a great name for it is. Yeah, The Miz does it sometimes when he's not losing matches. And with that, 1, 2, 3. Chris Jericho has fucking won his first title, world title, with a WWF.
Rock would win it back, not on the next Raw, but actually within a couple weeks, and then lose it in the Unification Tournament at Vengeance, where Jericho would beat him and Austin one night. I'm sure you've heard Jericho talk about that at some point in his life. The man brings it up constantly. But on Raw the next night, these two would actually team up to beat the Dudley Boys and win the WWF Tag Team titles.
I love reluctant tag partner stories. I really do.
And then
I'm a big fan.
They would lose them to Booker T and Test, which are just some weird, like, that's a weird team too. Yeah. Booker Test. Let's move on to somebody that we would never actually put on this podcast, but we have to because of how monumental this match is.
It's a 5-star match. I'm just going to put it out there right now. It's unfortunate that it is, because it's not really.
It's not
what
really
it is.
Like a good
it is
work.
A 5-star match.
It's not a good work rate match.
It's a five. You gotta, because when you think about 5-star matches, it can't just be about the technical prowess, because fucking hell, then most independent matches would be five-star matches probably. Yeah. You know, most in-ring, hell, half the takeover card would have been a five-star match. True. If that were the case, but it's not the case. It's, you got to take everything into account: commentary, crowd, atmosphere, all of that really goes into account. And when you take all the factors into it, in my opinion at least, WrestleMania 18, The Rock versus Hulk Hogan, is a five-star match.
I heard Rucker from Boot to the Face call Hogan the immortal racist, and so I'm going with that.
You're not wrong. He is a fucking racist. And there's a part here that made a part of the match that made me very uncomfortable watching.
Oh, I know what it is, and we'll talk about it. Holy shit.
But
we've got Canadian content on back-to-back matches with Jericho in match number one, and he's from Winnipeg, you idiots. And here we're in the Sky Dome in Toronto, and I know, Canadian listeners, I know it has been rebranded to the Rogers Center, but it's not. It's the Sky Dome. We all know it's the Sky Dome.
At the time, it was the Sky Dome.
Don't lie to yourself. Don't say, oh, the Rogers Center. No. Also, for those people who are, you know, our Canadian listeners who've only ever been to a baseball game in the Rogers Center / Sky Dome, I encourage you to go to America and to go to a baseball stadium, a stadium that is explicitly for baseball. It's so much better.
I have the oldest one.
It's Fenway's real good. I have only ever been
That's to, an opinion.
I have only ever been to one or two baseball games outside of Canada, and they were both Minnesota Twins games, like Twins home games, Target Field, and it was amazing. The atmosphere is so different. The Rogers Center is like a big amphitheater, essentially.
Dude, whereas, fucking Fenway Park. I don't get me wrong. For anybody that's listening to this that is a Red Sox fan and or from Boston and appreciates Fenway Park, I love Fenway Park. That aura, the atmosphere, the experience of Fenway Park is great. As a functional baseball stadium, Fenway Park might be the worst ballpark in not only all of baseball, but all of major professional sports.
I just love the vibe at an actual baseball stadium instead of, like, Rogers Center is an arena. Right? Like, it's meant to for lots of different things. Baseball Diamond's like, the friggin' shape makes no sense for anything else. So, good. It's just like, this is where we play baseball. I don't know. I don't actually like baseball that much. I'm just rambling on.
Baseball is on hiatus for me because the Red Sox traded Mookie Betts. Sadness. And I didn't count the shortened season during the year of fandom suspension. So we're attacking it onto this upcoming season. And then they traded Andrew Benintendi. So now we've tacked another year onto that. So now baseball's dead to me for 2 years. But shout out Fernando Tatis Jr., Dominican King, El Nino. 14 years, $140 million. He's only just turned 22 last month. He's doing it for the boys. But anyways, The Rock and Hulk Hogan had a match here.
NWO and had debuted. Oh, I'm gonna go into the whole history of it.
Oh, we gotta do history
and
first.
I'll do a little bit of the backstory and then I'll let you just take off. NWO, yeah. You know, as you know it, Hulk Hogan, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash debuted in WWE at No Way Out in February. Rock got Hogan, Austin got Scott Hall, Kevin Nash got injured. fans in Toronto are all in on Hulk Hogan. So now I've done a little bit of the pre-setup. They wanted to do Icon versus Icon. Whatever you were going to do, it's on you now.
This is the part of the match. It's just the best part of the match. It's my favorite part of the match. It's before the bell even rings. These two guys just stare at each other. And the camera shot is perfect. The crowd is electric. I was getting legitimately getting goosebumps just listening to it. And it got me thinking, fucking hell, I miss crowds.
Yeah.
Just in general at wrestling shows. Please do not take that as an excuse to start having crowds.
Don't open it yet, but we missed it.
Let us first get vaccinated or, like, figure out a means in which that we can safely do so before anything. Yeah. But also it got me thinking, like, wrestling is just better when there is, like, emotion behind it. You know, genuine emotion and... Fuck, I feel like that's what's missing with a lot of the product nowadays. It's like, yeah, we have great matches. I talked to you and a lot of the Full Press boys about, like, my favorite match ever is now that Pete Dunne Finn Balor match from Older Weekend. Because style-wise, yeah, it's the most Javier match ever with the submissions and the physicality of it. And Pete Dunne is my favorite wrestler and all of that jazz. But, like, the thing that was missing was, like, shit, can you just imagine if that crowd was in front of people?
Yeah.
Like, man, that shit would have been awesome. It would have been freaking amazing.
I think of, like, Banks Bailey would have been awesome with a crowd. Right? Like,
yeah.
Kyle O'Reilly Balor would have been crazy with a crowd, especially that NXT crowd. Like, there are so many things we missed out on in terms of, like...
Can you imagine the reaction of Kenny Omega beating Jon Moxley that way, if there was actually a crowd?
Or Kenta debuting.
Or Kenta, or fucking anything that's happened with the Good Brothers, or anything that's happened. I mean, even in Japan, New Japan had a great setup for their crowd at Wrestle Kingdom this year. But hell, if they had been able to pack the entire arena for Kota Ibushi,
yeah.
Dude, fucking hell, different. It would have been amazing. But
now let's go back to this match. We don't like Hogan on this podcast. If you're new to listening, this is an anti-Hogan podcast. If you are pro-Hogan, sorry, you're not going to like this. Best part of the match is the stare down at the beginning,
yeah.
Like you said. And then I look in the background and I see a sign that says, Hogan, please retire. And I'm like, this guy gets it.
Yeah. Like, honestly, please retire. And if Hulk Hogan had retired at this moment in time and then disappeared forever.
And then disappeared off internet, yeah.
This would have been, like, all-timer. Like, yeah. Hulk Hogan would not be getting shat on this podcast. Hulk Hogan would be, like... He would be in my top five or in my Mount Rushmore, but he is not in my personal Mount Rushmore because, Evan, say it along with me. Fuck Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, it's great. Hogan was so over here because he was a novelty legend at this point. We hadn't seen Hogan back in the WWF in forever, and we didn't know that he was as garbage a person as Pasta Mania was a concept. So that's fine. Like we didn't know that yet. Hogan is flexing at the beginning because he's overpowering The Rock, and the crowd is going absolutely bonkers, apeshit, whatever you want to call it. And he is the heel. That's important to know, is that coming into this match, he is being situated as the heel. The NWO is the lethal dose of poison.
Yeah.
That nonsense that Vince rambled on about. Yet, Toronto and Canada as a whole, all the WrestleMania fans decided, nope, we're cheering for Hogan.
Yeah, and weird, okay, but whatever. The Rock is selling his life out for Hulk Hogan, which is another thing that I will give Rock a lot of credit for, especially during this sort of part of his career, this sort of 01 into 02, it's more so with the Hollywood Rock stuff, is he fucking sells.
He bumps hard.
The Rock is not afraid. Not only is he not afraid to sell for people, he is not afraid to fucking make himself look like a bitch when it comes to selling.
Yep.
And he is looking like, he looks like a straight up rag doll with Hulk Hogan.
He looks, you know, weaker, but also he's so built up and so established already that he can look defeated and nobody's going to be like, oh yeah, The Rock's a bitch now. Like nobody's going to think that because he's The Rock.
Yeah, and he's really towing the line of overselling. This is not Shawn Michaels at SummerSlam 2005. This is, like, I could believe that this is happening to Rock.
Yeah.
But I could also believe that he is overselling.
Rock does get in control eventually and hits Hogan with the Just Bring It. According to an interview with Hogan, Rock adjusted his style on the fly to account for fans being into Hogan. And as he's working Hogan over, you can see him start to get more aggressive with the fans, and you can see that he's kind of made that adjustment in his mind, and I like that. That shows Rock, people are like, oh, you know, he's supernaturally talented and he's just charismatic, and Rock has a very good mind for the business. Rock has always had a good appreciation for the business. He knows he can sell. We talk about his psychology and his ability to kind of extend the matches. Like, Rock knows what the hell he's doing. I think sometimes people don't give him enough credit for being a student of the game.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not only Hogan. I've heard multiple different accounts. I believe JR has said it, that The Rock has, you know, pulled an audible, that this match really switched up on the fly because of the reaction to the crowd. It's a testament to both those guys because it's not only just Rock switching up his style to be more of a heel and really allow Hogan to have more of a shine because it's what the people wanted. It's also Hogan switching it up and making himself look like more of a babyface, kind of dialing it back to the Hulkamania era of Hulk Hogan and really starting to, you know, ham it up and get the crowd behind him. And it's not like he didn't try to get heat here. I mean, the guy
did at the beginning. He tried.
He was raking the back.
I hate that move so much.
He's doing such a heel. At one point, he drops multiple elbows. He does a back suplex. Rock tries to get a surprise rock bottom in, but Hogan turns it into an abdominal stretch. He does this weird choke slam. He
bites the Rock at one point.
He what?
He bites the Rock.
I didn't see the bite, but shit.
When he did the back rake in the corner, he bites the Rock at one point. And I was like, what the hell is going on? And that's where they went. Like, after that, they really switch it up and he stops being heelish. They work on the outside. They get to the outside. And Hogan drops Rock into the barricade, starts taking apart the table. And this is when Mike Chioda gets involved. One of my favorite refs. Big Mike Chioda guy.
Yeah, I love him. I love Mike Chioda so much.
Rock has a chair, and he's going to swing it at Hogan. And the chair gets taken away by Chioda, and that gives Hogan an opening. And Hogan gets a little bit back in control.
Yeah, Hogan gets back in control. So Hogan, is this the part where he hits the rock bottom?
No, not quite. So Rock locks in the sharpshooter because they get back in the ring. Because Mike Chioda's out cold because he accidentally ate an errant Rock forearm.
Yes.
And then Hogan's tabbing out, but the ref is down. They break up the hole because Rock realizes the ref isn't coming. Hogan hits the low blow, which again, heelish, but the fans fucking love it.
Big heel.
And then he hits a rock bottom. Rock kicks out of the rock bottom.
Yeah, he kicks out of the rock bottom, and then the crowd is unglued. Like, this is the part where it really started, the lid really started to get off the top.
And this
here.
Is the part where it gets uncomfortable.
Yeah, the Rock is wearing a weight belt, much like Cody Rhodes does nowadays.
Isn't Hogan's wearing the weight belt, not Rock.
Did I say Rock? Hogan's wearing a weight belt. This is why I have Evan on here. He corrects
me.
He's
the fact checker.
He's the fact checker of things. I see my head meant Hogan. But my mouth said Rock, as you could see where my allegiance lies. And then, yeah, he takes off the weight belt and he starts whipping the Rock with it.
Which just, nope. Nope.
In retrospect, not a smart idea because of Terry Bollea's.
So you know Hogan pitched it.
Because of Terry Bollea's racial biases, so to speak. And
you fucking know Hogan pitched it.
Yeah, it just gets made much better, though, when The Rock, you know, comes back. He grabs the belt and then whips Hogan with it one time.
Yeah, that's nice.
And it's a strong whip. It's pretty hard hit.
It had some oomph behind it. Then we get a rock bottom. Hogan kicks out. And here we go with the bullshit.
Here we go.
Fucking hulking up sequence that we have talked about on this podcast twice. Hogan popped up in an Undertaker episode, and he popped up in Shawn Michaels and his nonsense at SummerSlam 05. We are watching this stupid hulking up sequence. I'm not going to get that into it. I can feel my blood boiling. It's stupid. It makes no sense. Why does he have these supernatural powers? Rock is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. This makes no fucking sense. Hulk Hogan, big boot, geriatric leg drop. Rock with an enthusiastic kick out, and I screamed. I fucking loved it.
And that is why the people do it. That is why they do it. It's because of that reaction. Because whether you love Hogan or you hate Hogan, you're either going to pop when he wins or you're going to pop when he loses. But either way, you're going to get a pop out of it.
And I popped so hard. I was like, yes. Obviously, I know who wins the match, but I was just so excited when he kicked out. Because he kicked out with such gusto. Just, rah, get me out of this.
Yeah, get the fuck off of me.
Get off me. Rock hits a rock bottom. Then he hits another rock bottom. Then he does a kip up after the second rock bottom. Loved that. People's elbow, and all of Toronto forgets that they aren't fans of The Rock because they all freak out for the people's elbow.
Yeah, They're all on board. The move itself sucks, but I'll be damned if it isn't probably like the second or third most exciting move in all of professional wrestling.
People's elbow is the worm with a Gucci belt on.
It is literally, in my opinion, it goes number one, the stunner. Number two, the fucking tombstone power driver. Number three, the people's elbow. In my opinion, those are the three most iconic finishers slash moves in general in wrestling history.
Like,
and I don't care. That is unfallible to me, and I don't think they'll ever be topped.
People's elbow, 1, 2, 3. Rock puts away Hogan. And if Hogan, like you said, if Hogan had gone away at this point, the world would be a better place. But he didn't. TNA happened. All of his shit online happened. Hogan's a garbage person. I'm glad it's done.
He had a title reign after this. And commercial break.
We're going to take our first break. When we get back, one more Rock match from this run before we move on to his return. Back from the break, and we are looking at a triple threat WWE Championship match from July 02. It is Vengeance, baby. Not Vengeance A, like the NXT TakeOver that just happened, but actual Vengeance. And it is Rock versus WWE Champion The Undertaker versus Kurt Angle in what is an underrated Rock performance, because this triple threat match is fantastic. In the interim between when we last saw Rock and now, he had been the number one pick of the first ever brand extension, where he was picked to SmackDown. And we also get Big Evil Era Undertaker, where he looks a lot more ginger than normal. I say normal because he normally dyes his hair black and is all going through his "it's not a phase, mom." But this is where he's in his natural ginger hairstyle and is just big red, big evil. And this is Rock actually going for history, because if he wins, he would be the first ever 7-time WWF or WWE champion.
Yeah, and wow, that would has been broken multiple times.
That has been shattered. Just absolutely shattered, that record.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's fine if it's like John Cena that's done it, but it's been John Cena, it's been Triple H, it's been Randy Orton. Is there anyone else? Roman Reigns is on his way to it.
Is Edge getting close?
Edge is probably up there as well. How many does Edge have? He's probably around like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
So, Rock and Take. Not Rocker. This is not a Rocker.
Rock
match.
And Take.
Marty Jannetty is nowhere to be seen. Rock and Taker have a stare down, and Angle is just waving his arms. Just trying
it's like,
to
hey,
get
I'm here too, guys.
To hey, guys, me.
I drank my milk, and I'm going to pop a 3 Viagra.
Both Rock and Taker then lay hands into him. This was a really good triple threat match for consistent action. There was a lot.
This
going
is the
on.
Most indie triple threat match I've ever seen in my life. I don't care what
in
anyone
WWF
says.
Ring? Absolutely.
This was fucking spot fest galore, and I loved it.
So let's start with some of the really strange spots that happened. So they brawl outside. Angle and Rock get back in the ring. Kurt hits a good German suplex. He starts kind of firing off suplexes, but then Rock choke slams the Undertaker.
No, so my favorite part of that wasn't even like okay, it was before that. It was before the chops between Rock and Angle, when the Rock just grabs the Undertaker by the back of his head and literally just throws him down on the ground face first.
This is a very weird match, but it's I think of the 5 matches we watched, this is the one that entertained me the most.
This was in my opinion, the most entertaining one. It's not the one that had me the most invested. I would say the Mania X8 match was the one that had me the most invested, just because of the crowd more than anything. But yeah, this was definitely up there. This is probably, as far as in-ring quality goes, the best match of the bunch.
Kurt lays in hands on the Rock after the Rock chokeslams Undertaker, which is just a wild sentence to say. Rock hits one of his massive clotheslines and then locks in an ankle lock. What? Why do we all have access to each other's signature moves? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, what happened here?
What happened? Everybody's trading moves with everybody. Everybody's keys are in the bowl, you know? Undertaker with an Olympic slam, and it looks so good. Like, Taker should have stolen the angle slam, because it looks so good because of how tall he is. He lifts the guy so high up. But I guess Taker already has 2 different moves where the whole point is I bring the guy up and I bring him down. Right? Yeah. He's got the choke slam. He's got the last ride.
I pick things up and put them down.
I pick him up and put them down. Rock tosses Angle to the outside. Nobody tosses people to the outside like the Rock. The amount of flourish this man has on just fucking launching people over the top rope. I love it.
Yeah, it's great. It's just so fun because, so we get this cool sequence. There's the angle slam by the Undertaker that looked interesting.
Super cool. I loved it.
Interesting. And then we get a part of the match that I really enjoyed, which is when Rock hit a people's elbow on Taker, and then Angle drags him out of the ring and drops him on the announce table. And in one fell swoop, runs into the ring, and it's a near fall spot. And then a little, slightly later on, Angle sorry, Undertaker and Rock get into it a little bit, and The Rock just spits water right in his face.
Yeah, Rock just happened to have water in his mouth and spits it in Taker's face. I noted here that Angle shows up in so many of our episodes. We've never done a Kurt Angle episode because he's just such a good dance partner. Yeah. He shows up in so many different episodes because he can adjust and work with anybody. That's just a little shout out to Kurt.
He'll get a three-parter at some point.
He absolutely will.
For the simple fact, not only for the simple fact that he deserves it, but also because he's Evan's favorite.
Absolutely. I fucking love Kurt Angle. The man can do it all.
Anyways, Angle gets busted open here. I don't know when it happened.
I didn't see it either.
But he's got blood on his face. I tried like scrolling back to find it too. It might have happened off camera. I genuinely have no idea when it happened. The Rock hits a low blow on Undertaker, and then out of nowhere, pretty much, Angle hits a fucking massive chair shot to the Undertaker.
And when Rock hits a low blow, he also knocks over Javier's godfather, Earl Hebner. And
you son of a bitch.
huge chair shot by Angle to Taker. It was nasty.
Angle hits an Angle slam on Rock that honestly might be one of the best Angle slams I've seen.
It was
a high Angle slam. This dude fucking spiked the Rock on his neck. He first goes for the Undertaker to pin him after the chair shot, 2 count, and then he quickly runs over to Rock to pin him, 2 count, which, hey, wrestling, you know what you do is when you do 2 moves on 2 different guys to put them out, you go to the one you did it most recently to first.
That is like a WWF No Mercy strategy. That's a 2K strategy right there. Triple threat match, signature on one, finisher on the other, and you pin the finisher guy. You let signature guy try to get his bearings.
Yeah, clearly Kurt Angle wasn't playing fucking video games. He was popping 3 Viagra and sleeping alone. But not really, because he has like 80 kids.
Today's locker rooms are garbage. I'm the Undertaker. Brr, brr, brr. Just what an angry old man.
Anyways, Rock counters Kurt when Kurt tries to do, I don't remember, and then he puts on a sharpshooter.
After another ugly dragon screw.
Oh, jeez, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it was ugly.
Taker breaks it up and hits a last ride on Rock. Angle breaks the pin up by grabbing Taker's leg, dragging him back, and putting him in an ankle lock, which is amazing.
Love that move.
Taker breaks out of it and goes for a last ride, but Angle sort of like kind of contorts his body a little bit, gets his leg wrapped around, and puts on a fucking triangle choke.
Yeah, Angle just being like, I can wrestle. I forgot about that. And just starts busting out these actual amateur moves.
Yeah, Taker tries his fucking best. He tries to do these mini power slams to get, or power bombs to get. Angle off, and he just wouldn't do it. Eventually the Brock breaks the hold. Angle gets a pretty quick reaction in, and he gets an ankle lock on Rock. Taker then comes out of nowhere, hits a chokeslam on Angle. Rock follows with a rock bottom, but Taker kicks out of the rock bottom.
This is why this is an indie match.
And then we get to the finishing sequence here, which is pretty convoluted, people, so get with the program here. So,
Angle slam by Kurt.
On Taker.
And then he goes straps down.
Yeah, he goes straps down. Rock immediately follows it up and hits a rock bottom on Kurt Angle. He goes for the pin, and Taker is literally a millisecond from breaking it up when the 3 fall gets in. So, he's not able to break it. The Rock retains his belt.
He wins his 7th title, yeah.
And in about a month's time, he is going to get murdered by Brock Lesnar.
Yes, he's going to be the sacrificial lamb to a young man-child named Brock Lesnar.
3-part incoming. We will get to that down the line.
This is a crazy match. It is absolutely wild. I loved it so much because it was just constant action. It's the most PWG match of this era of WWF. Like, why are these 3 guys doing all these things?
Yeah, I mean,
didn't make any sense.
This is the match that I would recommend most to people as far as like entertainment value,
good entertaining value, yeah.
Just in the wrestling portion of it. I would recommend the WrestleMania 18 match to anyone just because of the crowd. Turn the volume up on it, just fucking soak it all in. It's not the worst match in the world as far as the in-ring quality wise. It's fine. It's a decent match. But it's just amplified so much.
It's the second worst quality match of the five this week.
Yeah, I would say so. And it's just amplified so much by that. But, man, speaking of crowds, Evan, should we move on here?
But before that, during the triple threat match, look in the crowd on the hard cam and you will see a very distracting China cosplay. That man was brave for what he was wearing. Good for him.
Is that you, Evan? Was that you in the crowd?
I was 10 years old at this time.
That wasn't you?
I'm going to go back in time in my China cosplay. We are moving on to the Rock promo, and this week we are going Hollywood Rock, baby. So, as you mentioned, Rock loses the Undisputed Belt to Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam 2002, and fans have started to turn on him since he was a movie star now, because we are a fickle, fickle people. Shouldn't we be happy for people's successes when they move on? We all want people to know who wrestlers are. We all want wrestlers with mainstream appeal, and the second they get mainstream appeal, wrestling fans are like, hey, he's leaving. Yeah, of course he is, because he's going to go be a fucking movie star.
Although, do you know what I don't understand? The only person who I feel like hasn't gotten any backlash whatsoever for doing this, John Cena.
John Cena, yeah.
No one hates John Cena.
It's been so long since somebody got mainstream success that we're like, yes, John, the chosen one.
So long.
You can go.
Batista fucking is a Marvel Avenger.
That's true. That's true. But also, Batista didn't get, he got booed because they turned him Hollywood, but they also won't turn John heel. They won't turn Cena heel. The closest we're getting is the Firefly Funhouse match where he got to be in the NWO.
We hated Cena when he was here, but now we miss him that he's gone. I hate fans. They're the worst.
We're fickle.
Fuck
Daniel
all
Bryan
of you.
Was right.
John Cena is the GOAT. Anyways.
After losing the belt to Lesnar, Rock tried to cut a show-closing promo and was booed mercilessly by the Nassau Coliseum. And he left for acting right after that, came back and said to be Hollywood Rock, because why not play off the hatred he was getting? He had another match against Hogan at No Way Out 03, and he beat him. And then he turned his attention to one Stone Cold Steve Austin, who he had lost to twice before. Rock is now giving us the Rock concert. This is from Raw, March 24th, 2003. This is the first Rock concert in a little town called Sacramento.
6 days before WrestleMania,
holy
everybody.
Shit. It's so, so good.
It's the
Rock
best.
Rock is here to sing you songs. And the first song is about Sacramento.
Oh,
the
man.
Rock is right here in Sacramento.
The way he says Sacramento the first time is just hilarious. Sacramento!
And the Rock's favorite thing about Sacramento is that in an hour and a half, the Rock is going to leave Sacramento. Rock's got his leather vest on. He's got his Sonny G's on inside. He's got the shaved head. He's looking full Hollywood Rock.
He's looking frisky.
Jesus Christ.
He's looking svelte. He's looking great. And he goes out there and he starts belting the chords. And then he gets to the point in the song where he goes, how do you people live here? You must be insane. I'm leaving Sacramento. Sacramento, I won't stay. Check this out. But I'll be sure to come back when the Lakers beat the Kings in May.
There's no easier way to get full heat than by making fun of a sports team. And Sacramento has one major league sports team, and it's the Sacramento Kings. And the year before, they had been probably screwed over by the refs in the Western Conference Finals.
They were screwed by the referees in the Western Conference Finals.
To send the Lakers there instead.
To send the Lakers to the NBA Finals instead of the Sacramento Kings, who since then have done fuck all as a franchise.
I pray every day for De'Aaron Fox to get some good teammates.
I pray for my fantasy team that he does as well.
So Rock sings that song, and it was great. Then he follows up with, you ain't nothing but a redneck.
No. He follows that up with a great line. Don't be mad at Rock because the Rock's good friend Shaquille O'Neal called them the Sacramento Queens, baby.
Queens! Yes. Then he sings Ain't Nothing But a Redneck ahead of their third and final match at WrestleMania 19.
Crying on. Well, you ain't gonna beat the Rock. Your candy ass is mine.
With his Willie Nelson signed guitar.
Oh, man. And speaking of Willie Nelson, we'll get to that in a little bit. But he has one of the best lines I've ever heard someone using in Stone Cold Steve Austin, if not the best. You can't mix beer with those funny cigarettes. They don't mix, baby.
They don't mix, baby. Then we get into I Can't Wait to Whoop Austin's Ass Again.
Oh my God, whip your ass again. The Rock then, can't wait to whip Austin's ass again. The life I love is whipping Stone Cold's candy ass. And I can't wait to whip Austin's ass again.
And Rock hits us with an a cappella song for the last song. Well, what he calls is the last song. But really, it actually isn't. And it's a version of My Way.
Yeah, I didn't write down anything for it. It
just Rock did a Rock's way.
It wasn't great.
Rock's singing voice, where does it rank among wrestlers?
I mean, hey, it's in my number one. You know, it's as far as like actual quality purposes, it probably is. Aiden English was a classically trained singer. It's different. He was a theater guy. It's very different between theater voice is very different from regular singing.
This is true.
So it's weird, but like I think The Rock has a fine voice. I mean, he was awesome as Maui in Moana, you know.
It's true.
He's actually a pretty good singer. He's not the worst. He wasn't great here, but I also don't think he was trying to be. So
no, he's better than Jericho.
Way better than Jericho. I'm sorry. I just can't. Jericho's singing style is weird and comes
not
off
for
as
me,
like.
Dog.
Like Fozzy used to be kind of like a cover band, and that makes sense because he kind of just sounds like a cover singer.
Yep. So an ambulance arrives because they had been showing Austin in the back, and then he starts driving his truck, and an ambulance comes in, and then Austin's truck comes barreling in behind him. And when Rock sees the ambulance, he says, "Who fainted from the Rock singing?"
Oh my God. The great part about this is so many cops come down. And then the crowd starts booing.
So The Rock cops out to stop Austin from getting in the ring. And then we get the glass shatter, and Austin's got his truck. Just kidding. It's the Hurricane.
And Emmy goes, "Arrest him. That's the Hamburglar."
Rock's unselfishness also ties into his work with the Hurricane, because he actually worked to get Hurricane over really well. Like, he lost a match to Hurricane.
He put the Hurricane over.
I love that. So the cops do arrest the Hamburglar, and then Rock's got one more song. But Austin emerges from the bed of the truck. He had camouflaged himself with black, like, blanket, I guess.
Yeah.
And just emerged from the back. And he's full bionic redneck at this point. He's got his two knee braces. He's about to retire in a
week.
He's
looking real chunky.
Yeah. Stone Cold's here, and he's laying into the Rock. Rock still has his mic on because he has like the little like headset mic.
Yeah.
And you can hear the whole attack, which I thought was really funny.
You can hear, you can hear the Rock. Oh. What a great setup to the match in just a couple of days. And, you know, honestly, what a great moment for Hollywood Rock. The guy is just on one. This is really Rock, I feel like, at the peak of his powers as far as entertainment value goes, because the guy is just, you just look at him, he's having the fucking time of his life out there.
He's having a great time.
Like, and that is probably, like, the most fun you can have as a wrestler, because you know it doesn't matter what you do, what you say, you're going to get a reaction, and no one can probably tell you shit in the back because you are the Rock. So it's like, you get free reign to just do whatever you want.
And then Austin uses the Willie Nelson signed guitar as bait to get Rock to come back in the ring. But Rock gets close and Austin just stomps on it.
Yeah.
People can't have nice things. I love this promo. There are lots of Hollywood Rock promos we could have picked. Because Hollywood Rock was just like... just so good. So we went with the Rock concert because the Sacramento song is one of my favorite ones of all time.
It's
one of the best examples of just like cheap town heat.
It's one of the biggest heat reactions we've ever seen in professional wrestling.
I think there was one recently where didn't Elias make fun of the Seattle for not having a basketball team anymore?
And they booed for like a minute. They booed him bad for that one.
Whenever I play 2K, I bring the Thunder back to Seattle. I'm like, I can do this for the people.
I don't blame you. I mean, the Thunder, I will give Oklahoma City its props. They have some terrific fans there. And they actually do invest in the franchise. Honestly, if I think any franchise is going to move, it shouldn't not be the Oklahoma City Thunder. I feel like that's actually like a really, really fun team, and the fans deserve that.
Move Sacramento.
Sacramento is bad. The fans are pretty good. It's just unfortunate.
I don't think there's any bad NBA fans, truly.
I mean, why do we have the Brooklyn Nets? Well, like, really, why do we have two teams in New York? It's a Knick town. It's always going to be a Knick town.
Yeah.
The Clippers. It should be the Clippers. The Clippers just got to fucking go.
Julius Randle trumps Harden, Irving, and Durant.
Emmanuel Quickly is better than all of those, baby, in the eyes of any New Yorker.
We are going to take our last break. When we get back, we're looking at Rock's return in 2011. Back from the break, and we are looking at a tag team match playa. It is Survivor Series 2011, Rock and Cena versus The Awesome Truth. Now, Rock left in 04 to go be famous in movies. I sure hope that works out for him. He left and returned to host WrestleMania 27. In the main event of 27, he screwed Cena and helped Miz retain the title by, you know, rock-bottoming the John Cena, which is great. Cena had hit him with an AA the Raw before Mania, though. So you know what? Fair game. Night after WrestleMania 27, they set the match for WrestleMania 28. A very cool thought, booking a match a year out. They wanted to have Rock come back because he wanted to get some of the ring rust off. So they had him have a tag team match. Originally, he was going to be part of a five-a-side Survivor Series match, and they nixed that and instead went with this tag match, Cena and Rock being uneasy allies against the very funny team of The Miz and R-Truth. I like their "You Suck" rap at the beginning.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. I thought this match, it's the worst of the bunch, in my opinion.
It is. It is very much, but I didn't want to watch twice in a lifetime, so here we are.
It is. It's. I mean, this match was also really important, I feel like, is because it is The Rock's first match back in however many years, 8 years, I believe.
It would have been 7 years.
7 years?
He had WrestleMania 20.
Yeah, seven and a half years, something like that. Yeah. It's insane, and he hadn't missed a beat. You see him at the beginning here. He starts off the match, and he is just chain wrestling with the fucking best of them. The Rock is grappling like no one's business. It's insane.
Before we get into the actual content of the match, the boos when Cena's music hits. Holy shit, the boos. So this is in Madison Square Garden. Isn't in New York. And Cena looks at the camera like he always does because he thinks he's Jim from The Office. And he says, "New York's favorite son, they love me here." He's just being booed so hard. And he tries to, it's funny because normally he would toss a shirt in the crowd. And instead, he gives his shirt to it's not the widow. I don't think Arnold Scotland, or maybe he is dead. I don't know. The widow of Arnold Scotland. And fans wanted to boo when they saw him giving a shirt to somebody, but it was like a 90-year-old woman.
Yeah.
And so you can hear audibly the New York fans be like, do something again. Do something different so we can boo you.
Yeah.
And he steps on the apron. They're like, boo!
Yeah, this was a time period where I started kind of getting away from wrestling a little bit. I was still watching, and fuck, I was invested in the story. I was invested in everything about it. And I just remember the hatred and the vitriol that John Cena was getting, and I couldn't understand it. I literally could not understand it because this was before I was on the internet as far as wrestling goes. So I wasn't
You weren't smart yet.
I wasn't in the smart universe yet. I was watching a lot of indie wrestling. I was still doing all of that stuff, but as far as like my understanding of why people hated other people, I just couldn't understand that as much. So seeing Cena mercilessly booed here, I was like, what the fuck? Like, this is the guy.
So, you know, this is the main event. Before this in the night, CM Punk had won the WWE Championship from Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah.
It was the start of his legendary reign.
Yep. 434, right?
Yeah, 434 days. And if you look on the hard cam, there are so many of the exact same CM Punk shirt. The white shirt with the Chicago logo across.
I mean, he was the guy.
Fucking everywhere. Have a fun time playing, like, count the CM Punk shirts. But as you said, there's no Rock ring rust here. He's on it. But oh my God, is this match slow.
This match is
slow. It's the same spot 74 times.
It is a methodical match. I will give them that. But they dragged it on way longer than it needed to. It really took a page out of old school 70s, 80s tag team wrestling, and where you have the babyface team and you have the one guy that you want. The Rock was really playing the Ricky Morton role here, I feel like. Or the Robert Gibson role, whatever you want. The one who was more of a...
Whichever one it is.
Whichever one you want that's more over. I thought Ricky was always more over, in my opinion. But, like, you know, you get the guy who's getting a lot of heat in the ring, and you desperately want the hot tag because the people desperately want to see The Rock wrestle. They don't want to see him tagging out here. And yeah, there's a lot of beatdowns. And by a lot of beatdowns, I mean, like, 15 minutes worth of John Cena getting his ass beat before we see The Rock again. Because, like I said, The Rock started the match off. He really goes in there. He's countering everything that Miz and Truth do. They slide out of the ring. They regroup. Truth comes into the ring because he wants to tag in and fight The Rock. He yells at Miz. You hear him clear as day. Miz, tag me in. And all that jazz. And as soon as he's in the ring, he goes, I want him. I want John Cena.
I want John Cena. He's my favorite wrestler.
And yeah, it's. Oh, actually, I'm sorry. I messed that up because The Rock actually fights R-Truth. And then Cena messes up his chance at a pin because Cena gets in the ring because I guess the Miz or R-Truth had a cheap shot. Someone had a cheap shot on Miz, on Cena. He gets in the ring. Referee is distracted by him. So there's no chance at a pin. And then him and Cena, Rock and Cena stare at each other for about 10 minutes. And then the Miz gets in the ring. And he's the one that goes, I want Cena.
I want John Cena, yeah.
And Cena tags in. There's a long fucking pause. There's a loud "you still suck" chant for John Cena. Yep.
Cena hits the five moves of doom, does the "you can't see me" to The Rock, and then while staring down The Rock, Truth gets in control by blasting Cena. And then this is where we get the heels just controlling for a long time. There's really not a lot to say.
I'm really not joking when I say it's like 15 minutes. It is legitimately like 15 minutes of this happening.
Once he stops getting worked over, Cena manages to lock in the STFU, but Truth gets in the ring to break it up. Cena hits an AA on Truth, and then Cena goes for the tag to Rock, but Miz knocks Rock off the apron, and Truth works him over at ringside. Then we finally get the hot tag, so Rock has been resting for 17 minutes at this point. Rock fires up on Miz with the DDT, Rock bomb to Truth, another ugly dragon screw, this time to Miz. We get a sharpshooter, Truth breaks it up, and then Cena hits a pretty good spear.
Yeah, it was Truth. More of a tackle, I would say, than a spear.
It was more of a tackle
because he drags Truth out with him as well. It was kind of like a football tackle, which I understand. I guess a spear basically is, but it's different. Damn it,
it's different. What's your favorite spear? Not like person, but like, is there like a spear in a moment in time that you're like, that one?
Oh, like a specific spear? I mean, the first one Goldberg ever hit on The Rock is kind of
is
the
up there.
It's my favorite one just because of the way that The Rock sells it. He just sells it like he's fucking dead.
I'm a fan of Edge at One Night Stand when he ruined things for John Cena.
Yeah, that's a good
one. I really think Rob Van Dam should have won clean, but also that was really good. And the one from the random time when Reigns and Wyatt were teaming and Wyatt had the pin and he pointed over at Reigns as Reigns speared somebody else. It's the coolest gif of Reigns and Wyatt. Oh my god, I don't remember what was happening or what was going on then that necessitated them to team, but it was the coolest fucking thing in the world, and I was so hyped, and then nothing came of it.
That's a weird one.
I'm gonna
also
look at that gif while
shout
we're
out
talking
to Rhino
and send it to you.
Because the gore is my favorite spear of any spear.
Shout out to Rhino. Anytime we can shout out Rhino on the pod, it's good
guy Rhino. Yeah, it's the hot tag, and then we get, first off, we missed a lot of different spots during the breakdown spot, but that's fine. There's a lot of anti-Cena chants.
It's fine.
There's a lot of beatdowns. There's a lot of fake FUs, and then he actually hits an FU. And then there's the stuff that Evan talked about.
Then we get a spinebuster by The Rock and a people's elbow, and that's it. They win. They win the match. Like, Rock just needed to come in the match. Cena
no rock bottom. No nothing. Literally just spinebuster, people's elbows, and vibes. That's all it was.
And, of course, the vibes. After the match is, like, for a long time, they're just kind of sitting in the ring hanging out. Rock is calling Cena into the ring because Rock would go up on a turnbuckle and put an arm up and get cheered, and Cena would move a muscle and get booed. And then Rock bottoms John Cena, which was excellent.
And that brings us to what?
Peter Rosenberg being in the front row of Survivor Series 2011. You can watch it and you'll see him.
Okay, that now leads us.
Is that what you meant?
That now leads us to once in a lifetime, baby.
Once in a lifetime. As I said, set up the night before or the night after WrestleMania 27, WrestleMania 28. Holy shit, do we take a long time to get to the actual match here? Because we need musical performances, damn it.
Okay, but here's how it's weird, because John Cena comes out first.
Yes.
And it's really awkward because John Cena comes out first and then he gets slightly booed. It's weird. It's like a boo cheer kind of deal. And then Flo Rida comes out.
So it's almost like they each got their own individual performer, because Diddy comes out and he introduces MGK. Machine Gun Kelly is here. And he performs before John Cena.
Did I skip that part?
You skipped that part.
I guess,
brother.
I skipped that part.
So then Machine Gun Kelly performs, and then John Cena comes out. And then WWE's favorite son, Flo Rida, is here. Like, just have MGK versus Flo Rida. Give me that fight. I want to see,
honestly,
Flo Rida,
I'm okay
snap
with that
him
one.
Like a twig.
I'm okay just with that. No, we support Machine Gun Kelly over here. I don't care about his music
in
any capacity whatsoever. But the man is dating Megan Fox, and we stand a supportive queen.
We stand. This match has so much build-up. I get that it's the main event, but, like, damn. Come on.
So much build-up.
I think the thing that I liked about this, I wasn't watching this. I remember this vividly because I was in second year of university when this was happening. And I remember the surprise when I found out the result, because I was under the impression, and I think a lot of people were, that it was going to be a one-off and John Cena was going to win. Because Rock, as we've mentioned, is super unselfish, and Rock will put people over. So I assume, like, that this is all going to be another thing, another feather in the cap of John Cena. Surprise, surprise. We'll get to that, but you've probably seen it.
Yeah, so this is around the time where I started getting further and further away from wrestling, but I started looking at more stuff on the internet about it, because Twitter was taking hold of my life in a very serious capacity. And we've reached the point where I now not that I hated John Cena, but I kind of understood why other people did. And I was just like, all right, so he's still going to win this match, so fuck all of you.
Yes.
And I was an annoying kid on Twitter in 2012, because I was only, what was I, probably like 12, 13 years old, something like that. It's
too young for Twitter.
Too young from Twitter. I mean, I was at that point 2 years into my Twitter excursion, so...
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry, I was not 12 or 13. I was like fucking 15 years old. What the hell am I talking about?
Way to do math, Javier. Way to do math. So arm drags early by Rock, and Cena looks confused as hell. John Cena's confused face, top five. That man always so good at looking confused.
Yes.
He has a career to take over for all of Mark Wahlberg's roles, because Mark Wahlberg's whole acting career is just looking confused and trying to figure out what's going on.
Mark Wahlberg has not made a good movie since, what the fuck was that porn star movie he made? In, like...
Boogie Nights?
Boogie Nights. He has not made a good movie since Boogie Nights, and I'll die on that hill.
Ted and the Other Guys.
Okay, good. Like, actual good, not like...
The Other Guys is actual good.
Okay, I don't fucking see The Other Guys getting nominated for jack shit. I mean, like, cinematic.
Oh, you good. You're talking artsy. You're talking art.
I'm talking fucking art, kid.
Jesus, and Boston is emerging.
The crowd is loud. It's fucking annoying. There's a headlock for 15 years. Cena does a bear hug king shit. But it takes way too long. I don't know what the hell that was about. Cena was just targeting the abdomen and back area, which makes sense. His finish is an FU, but he never fucking does this. And it was really annoying because it was a methodical presence to his stuff. But Cena isn't fucking Hiroshi Tanahashi. The guy is not good at targeting spots.
Rock starts firing up, hits the spinebuster, goes for the kick on the people's elbow. You know how Rock gets to the person's head and he kicks their arm in?
Yeah.
He goes for that kick, and Cena picks the foot. So similar to how Angle did it earlier, but not... Or how Jericho did it earlier, but not nearly as good.
He also isn't able to put on the STF.
No, the STFU is blocked, and Cena then goes with the five moves of doom, baby. We're talking shoulder block, miss your right hand, slam... And then the shuffle, or the you can't see me,
can't see
by
me,
the
motherfucker.
Five knuckle shuffle. And the five knuckle shuffle connects, and they said, like, this is the most monumental five knuckle shuffle of his career. Like, what what does that even mean, Michael Cole?
I don't fucking know. Michael Cole wasn't on one yet. Anyways, The Rock flips out of the FU, and we get a double clothesline spot. Has there ever been a good double clothesline spot?
I'm sure somewhere.
No, there hasn't been. So why do we do this to ourselves? I understand it's more of a rest spot than anything, but still. Cena then, at some point in the near future here, hits an FU for a near fall that had everyone going crazy because people were not ready for Big Match John to win this match.
No. That gets followed up with a rock bottom that gets kicked out of. Cena then goes to the top rope, which is foreign land for John Cena.
Except not really, because he does this move a lot.
Yeah, well, now, but I think at this point, like, this wasn't necessarily something he pulled out frequently. I think this is, like, a Big Match John type thing.
This is true. He hits the flying leg drop when The Rock, like, gets up a little bit. It's weird setup. It's such a setup. Yeah. It takes so long to set up. So don't do it, it's Johnny boy. But he does it anyways. It's for a near fall. The Rock eventually gets a sharpshooter on. Cena gets to the ropes. And this is actually a pretty cool spot here. So Cena gets to the rope. There's The Rock, like, obviously has to let go of the hold, but he just turns around and starts throwing like short jabs at Cena's forehead, and then just grabs him by the legs, drags him out, and puts the sharpshooter on again. I thought that was pretty nice.
And then we get into Cena locking in the STF.
No, motherfucker, we have to go back and we got to get the setup to that, because Cena hits a fucking sunset flip, and then he puts on STF, and god damn it, Evan, I am wet.
Rock is out cold by the looks of it. So we get another, like, this man loves his three-arm raise spot. There is nobody in the history of wrestling who likes this spot as much as The Rock loves this fucking spot. So the one arm goes up and it's down and Rock's dead. And the second time it goes up and it goes down. And you're like, oh, that's it. Rock's asleep. And like, that's it. No, on the second and a half, he pulls it up and he's going to power up.
He's like, fuck, yeah.
Do that on drop one, Rock. Just don't take a nap.
No, he needed more time. He needed more time to fire up. He was wrestling with his thoughts.
Wrestling with his thoughts. Oh.
Rock gets a Samoan drop.
Both men go for finishers. Rock eventually hits a Samoan drop and then a spine buster.
And a people's elbow. For near fall.
And Cena kicks out, yeah. Cena then does a couple roll-ups for two. Like, at this point in the match, you're not winning on a roll-up, John. You're going to need
Hey, you don't fucking know, okay?
You don't know.
They've kicked out of each other's finishers enough. John Cena might get the sneak. Honestly, if John Cena had won in a fucking crucifix pin, there may not be a podcast. I may be the fucking most happy man in America. I would be pulling a Forrest Gump, just walking and running around the entire country. Honestly, I might be traveling the world right now on my feet, just smile on my fucking face.
I just felt like running. Then we get Rock is on the top rope. Cena meets him up there. Rock pushes him off. Rock hits a crossbody, which again, not a Rock frequent flyer, I would say. He's a ground guy.
He's a big dude.
Yeah. Cena though hits them with the roll through and hits the AA 1-2 kick out. Cena's fully in control here. The
crowd's going wild.
Gets cocky. Yes. Cena gets cocky and he goes for his own people's elbow. He's gonna toss the green sweatband into the crowd.
He does the little arm wave little thing.
Arm wavy.
He's got a cocky, shit-eating fucking grin on his face. I loved every second of it. Johnny Boy bounces off the first ropes,
bounces off the second, and while he's off to the second, Rock pops up and hits him with the rock bottom for a three count. This was an amazing finish.
My favorite thing about this is, it's what if you're in the arena, it's even better because you see it happening and you're like, oh my god, like you before The Rock is even hitting the move, you could feel the rise in energy there because you know what's coming. But when you're watching it from our perspective, which is the video, in the background you see The Rock pop up and you're just like, oh my god,
it's happening.
Oh my god. And then he hits the rock bottom and you're just like, oh my god, because it's at this point he's hit, what, two people's elbows and two rock bottoms or whatever. There's like the third rock bottom of the match. And you're just like, all right, now we're getting to that point where this could legitimately be the finish. And we're so used to John Cena kicking out.
It's like when the third F5 hit WrestleMania 30, Taker, Rock. And everyone was like, wait a second.
Yeah, it's like, all right.
That's too many.
We've hit a lot of these.
Yeah, but that's one too many.
Yeah, and we're so used to, like, this was pre-Brock Lesnar. This was, he had already fucking beaten Brock Lesnar. No, Brock Lesnar's next.
Yeah.
And you know, he has just beaten everyone except for CM Punk. And then it's just so, you know, that Cena is going to kick out of this. So it's just even more impactful when that third hit on the ground happens and The Rock wins the match.
And The Rock then would come back for a rematch at WrestleMania 29 because Once in a Lifetime made too much money to be just Once in a Lifetime. Instead, it was Twice in a Lifetime. Cena won the rematch. And The Rock would just become this ambassador for
before
the WWE,
that
really
happened. No. You don't get to take it from him. I do. Which will not be on this episode, unfortunately, because we are saving that for another three-parter coming down the line. And if anyone understood that reference, you know whose three-parter that's going to be.
That's a good little setup. I like that. We have made it through, what is that, 14 Rock matches and 5 Rock promos.
And not enough.
It's the most we've ever done. It's still not enough. We missed so many fundamental Rock moments and things in his career. We really didn't get, but it's so hard to capture what was such an
electric
important career for wrestling.
Yeah. Electric.
The man could do it all.
And when you think about it, not that long of a career. He only spanned...
No, it's not like he overstayed his welcome.
He didn't at all. Like, you think about wrestling careers, and you think about the guys like Cena, like, you know, so many of these people that we hold so dearly in our hearts. Like, fucking CM Punk had a longer career than The Rock. Like,
yeah,
that's insane to me, if you think about it. Because The Rock is, I would say, if he's not on everyone's Mount Rushmore, he's the guy that's just outside of it. Like, he if he's not the fourth guy on your Mount Rushmore or whatever, he's your fifth. If you could add a fifth face, it would be The Rock.
And I can understand it. If your Mount Rushmore is based on, or if you're, you know, your top five is based on wrestling acumen, I think Rock is an amazing wrestler. But I think, obviously, if you're a technical guy, you're going to put your Jericho's, your Angles,
John Cena,
your Guerrero's, your John Cena's.
Your big match, Johnny Boys.
But if you're talking impact on the business, and you're talking,
you're taking
star
everything
power
into it,
the whole package, you gotta put Rock up.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about people who are the total package. We did our Shawn Michaels episodes, and you know, the Shawn is really a guy who exemplified the total package as far as charisma, being able to do as a heel and a babyface. Obviously, the in-ring work is second to none, and you know, he really had the total deal. Fucking hell, no, I don't think anyone has it like The Rock does, because The Rock not only has all the stuff that Shawn had, he had the fucking look. He had even more charisma. He was
the desire to do well, the desire to keep learning about wrestling,
the unselfishness to give in multiple capacities. He's not afraid to put anyone over. He's not afraid to do anything. The Rock really is the total package when it comes to professional wrestling, in my opinion, because. Yeah, I'm not saying he's as good in the ring as Shawn Michaels. He's not, but he is at least 90% of what Shawn was, in my opinion. He could sell his brains out. He could do any offensive move you want as long as it's not a top rope maneuver, basically.
He's not going to go tope on you.
Yeah, he's not busting out 450s.
The man can do what he's supposed to do. Yeah.
But, like, The Rock, it could tell a story.
He doesn't need a 450. He can make a fucking standing elbow drop the most exciting move in wrestling.
And not only that, The Rock gets the fucking major prop points because he is undoubtedly far and away, not even close, the most charismatic man in the history of professional wrestling. It's not close, in my opinion.
He is like one of the top five charismatic people in all of like sports and entertainment.
No, he is not even just entertainment, in all of humanity. Like, who the fuck is up there with this man?
Muhammad Ali is the only person I can think of in terms of pure charisma.
Yeah, and even that is to the point where, like, how much of what Ali did was performative in a way, you know, like a Conor McGregor, where it's really performative. And I'm not taking away from Muhammad Ali's charisma at all when I say that, by the way. But, like, obviously The Rock's charisma is in a lot of ways performative because, you know, you have to take his wrestling career into account with that. But you think of Dwayne Johnson now. That man is the most, again, I'm not kidding when I say the stuff about him being president one day, because he can legitimately do it. The man has the charisma for that job. obviously he is not at all qualified to be the president of the United States right now. I'm sure if he ever does decide to do that, it won't be for another 15, 20 years. And hopefully by that point, he will be able to, as far as, you know, knowledge and stuff goes. But President Rock is a thing because of the man's natural charisma as a human being. More than anything, yeah. And it's just
we are attracted to charismatic leaders, even if they are unqualified for the job
or batshit crazy.
I'll leave it at that.
And yeah, The Rock is fucking hell. The guy's name is The Rock. If anything,
and it's cool.
Of an indictment on anything. The man's name is The Rock. He got the name The Rock over.
Yeah, and The Rock says. He got so many things over. The man is good. That's what we learned. It's been our longest episode in a while, probably, looking at the time. But you know what? It's worth it.
It's worth it. It's The Rock. And we, you know, we have to do this little explainer at the end of our three-parters, because we always do. But The Rock is so different. It really is just gushing over him, because the guy is different. And he's one of those guys where if I were... You know, if I was fucking your age, your old ass age, and I got to see The Rock a lot in my youth, you know, I would be fucking geeking out over this guy. You know, I'm a big John Cena guy. He was basically the John Cena of the day as far as just honed up a lot more, obviously. But as far as the Attitude Era went, he was the guy who was out there with the charisma, who was out there really doing all the shit that I loved from Cena. In those early days of John Cena, when he was the white rapper guy, when he was even after that, when he was more of the charismatic, like, never give up guy and all that stuff. You know, the things that I loved about Cena, I saw a lot in The Rock in that earlier iteration of him. And they really do have a lot of parallels when you think about it, as far as characters in their careers. And that's what made, honestly, that rivalry that they had at the end there so iconic. Is the fact that there are so many parallels between these two guys. This deezed up white guy from West Newbury, Massachusetts, and this bronze god from fucking Florida. It's just hilarious to think about the parallels between those two individuals on that level. But, like, man, The Rock is awesome. John Cena is awesome. And that's all I got to say.
And wrestling's awesome. What a good way to leave it. You covered everything I was going to say, but that's going to wrap up this week's episode on The Rock. Javier, where can people find you on social media?
I'm on the Twitter machine at JML Sports. I catch me on there, yeah.
He's been on the Twitter machine for far too long, and he refuses to leave it. Follow me on Twitter at It7Gomes, ItsEvanGomes. Follow my new podcast as well, Pop Capsule Podcast, on Twitter at Pop Capsule Pod. Also, follow us on Twitter at Crossbody of Work. That's all the plugs. That's The Rock. You smell what they're cooking. Javier, any last words for the people?
Wait a minute. Who are we doing next, Evan?
Oh, right. Next, we're going back to women's wrestling, and we are covering an underrated performer from the Attitude Era. Obviously, the Attitude Era women's wrestling did not get enough time to shine, but we're going to look at this woman because she is a trailblazer, and that is Jacqueline. We're going to look at Jacqueline's career next.
Yes, eventually we'll get around to the lost episode, which is Ivory, but...
The first time, I'm going to put this into the world right now. The first time we ever do a live recording or some sort of, like, fun live thing, we're going
to
do Ivory.
Yeah, because it has to be, because...
It has to be the lost episode of Ivory.
It's the lost episode.
It is our Atlantis.
I still have my side of the recording. Evan doesn't, though.
My hard drive is shit. I'll just fill in the blanks and see what I probably said in the moments. It doesn't matter. Now, that's it. We're covering Jacqueline next week. We appreciate you listening to The Rock this week and the last 3 weeks. Javier, any last words for the people?
Black Lives Matter, and keep fighting the good fight, everybody.
See you next week.